We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
All right. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. We're thrilled to have you here, and we're very thrilled to be exploring this topic together with you. In our time together, we're going to be looking at strategies to help newcomer families navigate school in the United States. We're really excited to dive in. A little bit about us. I'm Rebecca Honig. I'm the Chief Content and Curriculum Officer at Parent Powered. So we reach families across the country with ways to support their child's learning and development. We serve a lot of families who are newcomers, not only helping them support language, but also navigate school systems in the United States. I've worked both nationally and internationally, spent many years at Sesame Street reaching families across the world with supports. And I could not be more thrilled to be joined by America Lopez. America was born in Mexico, and she's been living in the Berkshires for about half her life. She's a full-time community health worker at Volunteers in Medicine, also known as VIM. You'll hear her refer to it as VIM. It's located in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and VIM provides free, comprehensive, high-quality healthcare for patients in the region who are income-qualified or ineligible for health insurance. But they also collaborate with community partners like schools and local governments and housing agencies to address non-medical factors that contribute to good health, such as food supports, safe housing, employment, childcare, and of course, education. America is an active member of Latinas 413, which is a not-for-profit organization that aims to empower Latina women and leads hikes and camping trips for Latin people. And from 2021 and to 2023, she served as the parent liaison for immigrant families at Berkshire Hills Regional School District. And she just did an extraordinary work in that role, which was a joint effort between the district and Volunteers in Medicine with the aim of assisting newcomer families in adapting to and navigating the U.S. school system. So happy to have her here. And in our time together, we are going to explore as we go to the next slide. Here we go. we're going to build a greater understanding of the strengths, needs, and lived experiences of families who are newcomers to the United States. We're going to investigate strategies to support families as they transition to school in the U.S. We're going to look at effective ways to foster supportive communities for new families and spark some ideas to help build and strengthen the capacity of families to support their children's education and really become partners and leaders and advocates for their families and within the school community and the community at large. America, come on. I want to just say before we start that this presentation was developed over a series of coffee dates. America and I sat together. She shared her story, and then we kind of looked at her lived experiences and her professional experiences. And we said, well, what do we want the key takeaways to be for schools and administrations in terms of supporting families who are newcomers? So what you're gonna see today is the unfolding of America's story. We've arranged this in chapters. Like all good stories, we will start at the beginning, but as we share these chapters, as America shares these chapters, we will then pause and kind of investigate, like, what are some of the key takeaways from this portion of the chapter that we are on? And so let's start at the very beginning. We called this chapter Starting School. So when we get that slide, oh, there we go. Okay. So America, you had been in the United States for a while, and you had your daughter, and if, you know, first she was not in school, and then she became the age that, it was time to perhaps start school, and this sparked a fair amount of anxiety. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about that experience and what it led to.
Yes. Hi, everyone, and thanks for joining this webinar and looking at this recording too. So, yes, I am a Mexican immigrant. I came here when I was 22 years old, and I did all what immigrants, or pretty much what immigrants do. They come here, they get a little bit stable, they get families, and I did that. I had my daughter when I was about 30 years old. And then before that, I never had to navigate any system, especially not an educational system. And when I had her, all I knew was that I needed childcare for her because I was working. So I did that. And then when the time came, it was time for her to go to kindergarten or early kindergarten, but I didn't know that until some of the other mothers who had their children in the same place started asking me about where I was going to enroll my daughter. And I felt like kind of ashamed or like anxious because I didn't know the answer, and I felt like I needed to know that answer. And so what I did was like kind of like remembering and like, okay, who do I know who speaks my language and has a child around the same age? So I remember a friend who I met at a party, and she had a daughter about the same age. So I went and I remember I called her and I asked her, I need to get my daughter into school. And I knew that she had a daughter who was about 5 years old, but she also had an older daughter. So I knew that she had gone through the process. She explained it to me. She said, this is what you need. And I think this is where your daughter is going to be enrolled, which was the same school district as her daughter's. That was a little bit surprising for me because we live 5 minutes away from elementary school. And I thought that my daughter was going to be there, and the other school was like this, still is, like 20 minutes away from my home. I didn't know that school districts existed. I remember that I spoke enough English that I called the school and I asked what I needed to enroll my daughter and how I could start the process. So yes, they confirmed that I needed the same documents as my friend mentioned. So I did that. I started gathering the documents, and it was easy for me because my daughter was born here. So she had all the documents that she needed. I had proof of address. I had her immunization record. So I had everything I needed, and I went through the whole process, and I felt a little bit hesitant about the process, but I could, as I said, I could still ask questions. And after that, I remember that every time I was at a party or met anybody who had a child around the same age, I would say, oh, is your kid going to school yet? And if they would answer no, I would say, okay, this is what you're going to need. You need this, and you need to get ready before you even try to enroll your child. Have everything ready so it's easier for you. And I remember that sometimes people will look at me like, okay, I don't know why you're asking me this, but I just wanted to help. I didn't want anybody to go through the same experience that I did. I just wanted to be helpful. I was a little bit annoying.
Listening to this part of your story, and you and I talked a lot about this after, as you were telling it, you know, as an administrator, an educator, you hear this and you're like, this is an amazing opportunity, right? And what a gift to the school that you have people in your community who are helping families navigate in informal ways. So I think about this, and it strikes me, and we chatted about this, that these informal family engagement moments that are almost invisible to you in the district, possibly, or in, you know, in the walls of the school, these are just incredible opportunities because these are moments where trust is in place, right? America, you mentioned feeling anxious and sort of running through your mind, like who would I feel comfortable reaching out to? Mm-hmm. So, and then you became that person and you were chatting with people at birthday parties and wherever you found them, helping them navigate. So what you and I chatted about and what we were saying is like, so what could we make for those people who are out there orienting families around school in informal settings? Like, could we give them more support, more materials? They're doing the important work of sort of bridging those trusted relationships and communicating really critical information. So we sat down and we made a little resource that those of you on this meeting here might be able to adapt for your own purposes. So America, walk us through what this is and share it out with us in Spanish.
Yes. So Rebecca and I were talking about how helpful would it be for maybe somebody like my friend who I mentioned to have a card or just a card saying something like, bienvenidos a Modibro Elementary. Estamos muy complacidos de que su familia se una a nuestra comunidad escolar. El primer paso es registrar a su hijo para la escuela y para iniciar este proceso, llame a nuestro enlace de familias, Susan al 413-339-4380. Cuando conteste, comuníquele, necesito inscribir a mi hijo o hija en la escuela y ella le ayudará con todo el proceso. Nosotros nos aseguraremos de que tenga apoyo con el idioma. Quedamos a su disposición.
So a few things that you may notice that we made sure to put in there. We didn't just put the number, right? We also gave the name of the person who would be picking up on the other end. It's a really vulnerable thing to reach out for the first time. So having a name, knowing who's going to be on the other end of that phone call can be really helpful in sort of adding a level of comfort to that initial reach out. Another thing that provides some nice scaffolding is you'll notice here we have a conversation starter, right? So like when Susan picks up, say I need to register my child for school, right? Having that first thing you can say can go a long way towards bridging that connection. You'll also notice that we made sure to mention that language supports were available. And I think this piece is really critical. You'll hear us talk about it throughout, but we always want to be offering language support. It is absolutely essential, especially in those early, I mean, in all communications, but those first communications when we're really like navigating systems for the first time, we want to make sure we're always offering language support. Another takeaway that we talked about, so you have these informal evangelists, these trusted sources who are out in your community talking about your school. But we also can look at like, what can we do to become a trusted source, a more familiar presence in our communities as schools? And so America, one of the things you were mentioning is just putting yourself out there where people are already going, where they're already comfortable going. Can you talk a little bit about those types of events and experiences?
Yes, I think that in all the communities where newcomers are, they have a place where they go, where they feel comfortable. So I think that if schools come to those places and they try to, it's just showing a face, showing a familiar face of attending events, festivals, or whatever it's happening around your area. And also kind of paying attention to who is helping the families, who has built the relationship with them. That person can partner up with the schools just to make their job a little bit easier. And another thing, it's offer space for gatherings at schools, whether if it's an open house or it's just a coffee with a teacher or just meeting the teachers, whatever it is, but just offer a space for the families to come and be inside of the building to get familiar with the schools as a physical place too.
Another thing to just sort of keep in mind is you as the school don't even have to be the host of the event. You might offer up your gymnasium for your local immigrant center. You might offer up your sports field for a community pickup game of soccer. Even those experiences helped families to get comfortable with, you know, the structure of your school, how it works, how things are laid out, how to get in and out, you know, like where to find things. It just builds overall comfort. Another takeaway that is we discussed is, you know, when you do meet with families, we always want to assume one critical thing, which is that they want to be engaged. And so to really always remain curious about the family's background, about their passions and interests and lived experiences, so that you're really coming at this from a place of openness, curiosity, and active listening. And America, you have some questions you feel are really critical for schools and districts to ask families when they meet for the first time in order to really maximize support. Tell us a little bit about those.
Yes, I think that asking these questions will demonstrate to the family that you're coming up with curiosity and that you, as a school, want to learn more about them. And yes, we always advocate for language access and language support, but also is learning about their background, being a little bit more curious and going a little bit beyond what you see in paperwork. It's trying to find out what is the family background. Do they have more family here? Are they here by themselves? Because if they have family who received them here, it's more likely that they're gonna know how to navigate the school system, or they might be a little bit more familiar. They will still need support, but maybe it's a little bit less than a family that it's just new to the area and it's here with no other family members. That family needs another layer of support. And I think it's also very important to know what is the educational background, because if a family comes with a professional background, maybe they know how to navigate school systems. They are used to systems. We all have systems in all the countries. They might be different, but we all have them. So it's a little bit easier for those families to kind of like learn the ropes. And then for the other families who might not have the same literacy level, it might be a little bit more complex, so they will need extra support. So just be curious about that and try to accommodate. I know it's how difficult it is because we have tried to do it many times at the clinic and even when I was working as a family liaison, but I try to be like really curious and see what the family needs. And I know that many of the school staff, and I know that many of you who might be watching this are doing already that. So thank you for doing that. And also, how does the family perceive and value education? That's very important because it's for some families, education is a value, but for some other families, and I'm thinking especially for like maybe families who come from rural areas. Education is more like a privilege, right? And so the priority is work. So just be curious about that and find out how does the family perceive education and what kind of supports can we offer. Also, all the families assume that all the families have hopes and dreams for the child, because yes, all the families have hopes and dreams for the child.
The other thing, and again, I think we can't say this enough, but always, always offering language support. And if you can't, for example, if you have a family coming from a country where you don't have anyone in your school or district who speaks that language, look for who in your community can. Is there a receiving agency or a receiving family who might be able to partner with you to offer interpretation and translation services? All right, so moving on to the next chapter of your journey or your story, it's titled Advocacy, and you will all soon find out why. So you were plugging away at school, getting more and more comfortable, and then something happened that really shifted your sense of sort of how secure you were and your community was with the school system. And I'm hoping you can kind of walk us through what happened and then what happened as a result of that thing.
Yes. So my daughter was in third grade when the pandemic hit. right? It was so unexpected for everyone. We didn't know how long it was going to last, and we just knew that we had to stay home. And I remember that all of a sudden now we have to learn another system, which was online learning. And at that time, I remember I was taking some classes online, so I was kind of familiar with online learning. And I thought, oh, okay, good. I got this. I can help my daughter. And then I realized that it wasn't easy. My English was so much better. My computer skills were fine, also I thought. And then I realized that it wasn't easy. So I remember that again, I went back to some of the families I knew from another school district. And I remember one of my friends, actually, one of my closest friends. And I was curious about how she was doing and how her children were doing during this time. And I remember I called her and I asked her, how are your children doing? Are they attending school? How's the online learning going? And she said, we are not doing it because we don't know how to do it. We have no idea what's going on, and we're just gonna wait until school starts again. And I said, but no, this is a school. Your children should be attending a school. This is a school, and if they don't go to school, as I said, I am a little bit annoying with the school because education is important for me. So I was like, no, your children should be in a school. So what's happening? Tell me what's happening. Do you need help? How are you doing? And then she said that they didn't have the information that they needed to access either the platform or anything in Spanish. And I was thinking, okay, if this is only one of the families I know in Pittsfield, how many other families are going through the same thing? Not only in her school district, but also in mine. And at this time, like a lot of things were happening, right? Like families were trying to get or join groups for information and support. And I remember I was part of a WhatsApp group where we will share information about resources and food and updates about what was happening and whatever information was useful to for the newcomers. And I remember that I intentionally asked about school. And many of the families in the group, about at least 10 of the families in the group, shared the same thing, that their children were not attending school, that they didn't know how to access, that yes, they knew that there was a presentation to learn about the online platform, the online learning, but that they didn't have it in Spanish, so it was not of use for them. So I remember feeling angry because I was thinking that the children were missing school and that the parents were going to be res considered responsible for that. So I was like, but they're not the only people who should be offering support to their children. The school should be also offering that support. And the first thing again, is a language access. So I was part of an organizing group, and I remember that I started just creating more conversations about it. And we invited one of the school leaders just to hear from the families. And I remember that I would offer interpretation, and I was afraid. But I was not as afraid. I was not afraid because coming from maybe a place, and this is not for everyone, but coming from a place where maybe when you speak up, you receive a little bit of pushback. I was afraid that if I did that in my daughter's school district, I was gonna be just not received as the those comments were not gonna be received as well. And then in the other school district, I was like, okay, this is not my school district. So it doesn't matter to me because I'm gonna say it and there's no consequences for me. And it's the truth, it's happening, and we need to speak up. So I remember that we had our biggest win for that organizing group and deep partings, because that was a, for me, that was a parting win, was that the school started mobilizing and hire some people to translate the or add closed caption in Spanish to the presentation, which I think, I mean, that was not something that families would need to advocate for, but that it took for families to come together and share their experience and then speak up in the district. Luckily, the district listened, right? And they did what they felt they needed to do. So it was done.
Some things that you were organically doing that I think are so important. And if you go back one slide, we can kind of have a look at. So you mentioned something, America, which is that you were not advocating in your daughter's own district. You were in a different district, and that's part of what helped you feel comfortable really speaking out and organizing other parents. And I think we hear this and we really need to say to ourselves, how do we communicate to families that you can speak up, that we want to hear your voices, right? So I think first we want to make really clear statements to families that this is a place where we listen. And painting the picture also of just how important those voices are, that this is how we can ensure support, that this is how we best support our students as well. But also, we need to then provide spaces for those voices to be shared, whether it's meetup groups online, frequent and ongoing surveys of families, affinity groups, gatherings. We want to hold the space for listening to happen. One of the things you mentioned, America, is that you invited the district into those conversations to observe and to listen so they could hear firsthand. So I think if we're always communicating to families that we want to be listeners, that we up the chances of getting invited into those spaces so we can really hear directly from families. I think also key here is that families need to see that what they say matters, right? So what you mentioned, you were advocating for language support and you got it. And I think that is how we communicate to families above all else, that what they say matters, is that we take action, and that what they say leads to change. Another takeaway, that is really highlighted, I think, by this chapter of the story is that when we give support, it can't just be an additional scaffolding around navigating systems. It can't just be at the beginning of the year because change is always happening. And I wonder, America, if you could talk a little bit about, like, are there points in the year where you really want schools to say, oh, wait a minute, we're introducing a new system, things have changed, we got to really double down on the support we're offering, especially to newcomer families.
Yes, I think well, and I'm gonna use one of the examples from the school district in which I was working. So the grading system changed, and I remember that families were getting used to the previous grading system, and then we had these news that the grading system was gonna change, and families started wondering, and I started wondering because I was like, okay. So now it's going to change, and how am I going to explain this? I remember that, as I said, school systems are so complex, especially when you're not familiar with them. So I remembered having these conversations with each of the principals. There's three schools in this district, and asking them to convey this information in a way that families could easily understand, including me, right? Because this was going to impact my daughter too. So they did that. So if you have a change like that, that it's huge and it's going to impact that child, yes, you need to convey that information in a way that it's easily understood by families if it's a new routine, for example, if it's when you have days, that's some that it's on the calendar. Yes, it's in the calendar, but I feel like that information can also share in a way with, that is like, wait, so tomorrow we only have half day, and it's simple, it's easy, and families don't have to go back and take a look at the calendar just to check. Not all families have as a priority to just be on top of the calendars. So please be aware of that. And then if it's a new transition, if it's from if children are going from the elementary to the middle school, that's a huge change. That's a huge change. So please be mindful of that as well. And just ask what can you as school do to support all the families. But again, if you have community partners, just reach out to them with the information. I'm sure that they will be happy to help you share that information.
I think, like a rule of thumb, we could all be doing is pausing to reflect before any new information goes out and say, okay, is more scaffolding needed? Is more support needed? Is this a new system? Is this a new concept? Is this a new routine? Is this a new piece of technology? And really then picturing your families and making sure you're really picturing your newcomer families. Ideally, they're at the table. Helping you look through these to say, yeah, here's an area we need more support. Here's an area we need more support. All right. So, up until this point in your story, America, you were kind of an informal advocate and support, but that quickly changed. And you took on the official position that to some degree you had been serving for many years, which is the official part-time immigrant liaison for the district. Tell us about sort of how that came to be.
Yes. So again, with the pandemic, many things came, many positive things came. I started volunteering at the clinic at BIM, and I got a job as a part-time community health worker. And that's how I got to work with many of the families and helping them with school registration, getting an appointment. Well, first of all, getting insurance for the children, getting them a pediatrician. So helping them again to get all the documentation they needed to get their children enrolled in school. So I was again relearning the system with the families because I knew from my daughter, but I was learning new things. Actually, I was more observant now that I needed to help other families about my own daughter. And actually, I think that being the family liaison has been one of the greatest experiences because of that too. So I remember that as I was doing my work as a community health worker, my executive director said to me that BIM or clinic was going to be partnering with the school district in Great Barrington. And she said that there was going to be a position for a family liaison, which was basically doing what we were doing. And I mean, me and my coworkers were doing for the families, but it was going to be up for an application. And I remember that she said, and I think that that job, you will be great at that job. And I was so hesitant because I said, I don't have a background in education. I don't know anything about it. And that's working with the school. I don't, I felt that was so big and I felt so overwhelmed by the idea of doing it. And then she said, but it's doing what you've been doing. And I remember that I was like, okay, I don't know how to do it. And I don't know, if I'm gonna be good, but I want to be good and I want to do it. So I remember that I said, okay, yes, let's try and let's see. And if it doesn't work, I have support? Can somebody help me? Who's gonna be helping me through this journey? And she said, no, don't worry about it. You're not gonna be alone. We got you. You're gonna be doing what you're doing and you're gonna be fine. And I remember I started the job with a lot of hesitation and respect for the people too. And I remember that as I started into the role, it started growing in me. And I entered the position actually with a lot of with a mindset of us versus them, right? I wanted to kind of be a disruptor, but just because I wanted to do it on behalf of the families that I was working with. And I remember that as I learned more and more about what was happening inside of the school and the people who were doing their best to support the newcomer families, my perspective just shifted, right? And now I wanted to work alongside them. And I remember, lucky me, that I had a mentor who started talking to me about family engagement and all these things that I for me were new, but they all made sense to me. Like, yes, I want to work with the school. I don't want to work against them. I want to work in behalf, and I want to work with the families. So how can we partner? How can we? I want to be a bridge for the school and the families. And actually, that's the position, right? Being a bridge. But it didn't make sense to me until then, until I realized, like, okay, the school wants the child in the school. The parents want the child in the school, and the child wants to be in school. So my job is to just like put the team together, like put everything together, and just like support the school, support the family, and support the child in the ways that I can. I didn't work directly with the children, but I work with the children through the family. So the more and more I learn, and more I observe people around me, the more I felt that I was that if that I was maybe a little bit closer to be ready to be in the role. And then I remember that I started meeting people, other family liaisons who were doing the job, who have been doing the job for many, many years, that I didn't even know that family engagement was this huge thing that it is. I was not even aware of that. And that opened my eyes to a whole new world. And I just wanted to learn more. And I just wanted to know more. And I wanted to know how I could support the families. And I started talking to other family liaisons and asking them, how do you do it? How do you support your families? And what do you do when you find this struggle, and how have you worked through this, and how do you ensure that you have language access? So all of these things, it was like coming into a new world, and I was so curious that I think that that helped not only me in the position, but it also helped me to inform better the school district, because I was making those connections with other family liaisons who also, like me, were immigrants. So they offered this perspective. And I remember that even by shifting my perspective, the school leaders, the school staff, school teacher wanted to work more with me because I wanted to be helpful. I wanted to be a resource. I didn't want to go against. I wanted to say, like, how can we just work together? How can we partner? What do you need to do? I have this idea. I heard that they are doing this in this school district, and they are so ahead. They are advancing this. So how about we try this? How about we try having an open house in Spanish? And I even remember that the principal at the middle school, he was a leader. He was so open to these things, and he actually started doing it. So it was easy for me to kind of like get a little bit from the other school districts and from what he was doing and from what everyone was doing around me to just kind of put it together and say, how can we make it happen here in the school district?
And I want everyone to get to hear about some of your biggest pride points and projects in your time in this position. But before we sort of call them out, you said something to me over one of our coffee dates about a parent who came to you, I guess, as you were in this role, and talked about this issue of, as a newcomer, what happens to your sense of power and efficacy? And I don't know, do you remember what you said? Or, yeah, because I
Yes.
do. Okay, so yeah, better coming from you, but yeah, tell us about that moment.
Yeah, so oh my God, this job is so humbling. And I remember that I had so many great experiences with families, and one of them was this family who said to me, her daughter had been in the district for so many years. And she said, this is the first time that I get to be in the school. And also inside of the school. And that I feel that I belong here. And the second thing that she said is that she felt that she, now that she had the information, she gained a little bit of her power, because all the power that she had, she was here an adult, but she didn't have the ability to speak for herself or to speak up for herself. And not it, and it wasn't because she couldn't or she didn't have anything to say. It was only because she felt that there was nobody who would listen to her, and that she could not communicate her ideas. So for me, that was so powerful that she thought, oh, now I can say or share my concerns. And I know that somebody's gonna listen. And it's not that the school teachers or the school didn't want to listen. It's not it wasn't even that. It was that there was not that bridge for the families and the school to communicate. There was a one way of communication, and it was from the school to the parent. And then when the school decided to not only open the role for a family liaison, but to partner with other organizations and build that relations and say, how can we support our families? It was then when that when everything started happening in the family. I'm just this is just one example, but I have so many good stories about that time, because it was just so good to see families coming up and with their concerns, speaking up, asking questions, getting their children enrolled or signed up for extracurricular activities, for music, for art, for sports. Yes, that the school district has changed a
Yeah.
lot. Yes.
So let's look at some of the things you did to facilitate that change. And I think the theme when you were talking about these projects that I was seeing is that, you know, all of this work and the projects that you're most proud of have this theme of helping families reconnect with their power, reconnect with their voice and their sense of efficacy. So the first thing that I'd love to sort of give folks a window into were the LCAP groups that you created. So tell us what that stands for and a little bit about how you ran those meetings, because you centered them on some essential questions that I think are so critical for all of us to hear.
Yes, so many things were happening. Many great things were happening. There were some other things that we still, as a school district, and I'm saying we because I felt part of it, that we still needed to work on. And I remember that I was thinking that at some point I was going to leave the position, but I would not like any of the work that the school and I and the clinic had created together. So Remember that I started thinking on that we needed a group of parents to continue some of the work, or for the parents to have a place to come together and share their concerns, their experiences, and also share support and information, right? Those groups are not for, well, from my perspective, are not for sharing grievances. It's for like to work ahead and share like, okay, what's working, what's not working, what things we see as a group that are changing, or some people might perceive that are changing, but what are some of the things that can work better for the families? Also, like as I said, support and information. Who can reach out with questions? Some families might have gone through a certain challenge and they learn to navigate it and they can share that with another family. Some families might have learned how to sign up their son for soccer and it's a complex process. So now they know how to navigate the process. They can help other parents. So going back to the beginning of my stories, like they will feel more comfortable because now they can ask someone in their own language and they know that the person who they ask is not gonna be maybe someone from the school. It's gonna be a little bit less informal, but at least they're gonna have a, like, oh, I have at least the basic information on what to ask and how to sign up my son. So now I'm gonna reach out to the school and I'm gonna do it. Those I'm sorry.
Oh no, I keep going.
I was going to say that I didn't say what the LPAC stands for, and you might have one in your school district, and you may know it by a different name, like maybe EMPAT. But for us, it was English Learner Parent Advisory Council, and I know that in some other schools are called multilingual advisory councils. They have different names, and these groups are for parents to offer support to each other and also to inform the school district again what's working, what's not working, what can be improved. And what it's great about these groups is that it's parent-led and that it's parent voice. And what is more important than parent voice, right?
And what I love about sort of centering it around these questions, it's a beautiful structure, but this third question, what are things you see that are changing? I think one of the things that's so simple and amazing about that question is it holds us all accountable to making changes, right? If we're giving feedback to a school or district, we want to know that it matters. And so this question sort of, I think, drives us to notice, oh my gosh, we've been talking about this thing. We mentioned something that's not working, and now we're seeing this change. And when we think about how to sustain groups, this is the way, right? Because the groups need to know that it matters, that it matters that they're coming together, that they're sharing their time and their voices. And it's recognizing change, of course, implementing change, and then really taking the time to recognize and celebrate that differences that we are evolving, that we are getting better at what we do. I just love that. All right, so another thing you implemented, teacher meetings with families. So tell us a little bit about this.
Yes, so for me this was a huge one because for many families, especially at the high school level, I don't know how it works in other school districts, but in the school district here in Bedfordshire Hill, it used to be that that parents didn't have a lot of opportunities to meet the teachers or talk to the teachers, except for the open house or maybe when the teachers had this meeting for families to come and ask questions. And I remember seeing this information on the website, and I reached out to the principal and I asked her, are you gonna have interpretation in the meeting so I can start reaching out to the families I know and so they can come and have questions? And she told me that these meetings were so fast that parents will have only like a few minutes to talk to all the teachers. She should suggested that we found another way to do this because it was like a fast-paced kind of like interactions. So I said, if it's okay with you, I would like to talk to the ESL teachers and ask them if they would be willing to have at least 15 minutes, which with each of the family, I can arrange those meetings, just for families to have the opportunity to talk to the ESL teachers. And the principal was fine with the idea. I reached out to the two ESL teachers at the high school, and I remember I said, "You don't have to do anything. I can do it. I can call the families. I can arrange the meetings. Just tell me when you have a block of 3 hours." I think it was 3 or 2 hours, and I just 15 minutes for each family. If you give 15 minutes to each family, because I know you have a lot of families, but if you at least talk to them and tell them a little bit about how their student is doing and all that, they will really appreciate it. And I remember that one of the teachers was a little bit hesitant because she didn't know if families were going to be coming or not. And I said, "Oh, no, they're going to come. I think they're going to come." And I was so afraid that they were not going to show up. And I was like, "Okay, I promise, I better deliver." So I remember that I would call the families and say, like, "This is very important for you. You're like, this is like a one time thing that's gonna happen this year. So please just make it on time. Come with questions you have. Come ready with questions. Come ready with questions because it's gonna move fast." So I scheduled the slots. 15-time slot for each of the families, each families for each of the teachers. Yes, there were families who were not part of this, but they were families who were a little bit whose students were a little bit more advanced. So I was like, okay, they're going to be fine because they are going to have another opportunity to meet with the teacher or the counselor. So I prioritized the families who needed like that extra layer of support. And I got there and I was like, we're not even going to need interpretation because I'm going to be there and one of the ESL teachers speaks Spanish." So we did it. All the families show up and all the families show up even before the time of that meeting. And what I didn't not expect was that they were going to come with the students. Because that's custom in at least in Mexico it is, right? Like you go to a meeting with a teacher, you bring the student. And I thought that they're gonna be showing up alone. No, all of them brought the student with them. So it wasn't only the parent or it was the parent and the student. So both of them were sitting face to face with the teacher and they had opportunities to clarify, to ask questions. And I just remember some of the parents' faces like beaming with pride when the teacher will say, like, "The child's doing so good in this and this class, and he's gonna be or she's gonna be ready to move to that class." And yes, they're working in their English skills, but they're doing so good on this. So for me, that was just so like, it just showed how much the families wanted to be involved, even at that level of like a high school level, how much they wanted to be involved in the children's education. And for me, it was such a big, I wanted the teachers to see that. And I wanted them to recognize that families needed that they needed to see them, to talk to them, to feel that they were going to be heard, and to feel that they were going to be seen.
You said something that we've talked about this before, and I'm hearing it like through fresh ears, and I want to put a highlighter on it because, we've been talking on this webinar about supporting families when new systems are introduced and new routines. But you did something when you were starting these meetings that I want to name, which is that this was new for teachers, and teachers needed more support. And, the teacher who came to you who was nervous was signaling something that we really need to listen to, which is that sometimes welcoming a family, conversing with a family who you don't speak the same language as, who might have different cultural norms and values, like, is a vulnerable thing for everybody, and that we always want to look for ways to also be supporting our teachers, right? And I think so much of the work you did was actually also around helping teachers sort of navigate new situations, new routines with families, and that the support you gave really allowed these things to be sustainable and to be positive for everyone, which is just, I just want to mention that because it's such a significant piece of the work. Another thing that you did, America was very busy in her time there, and this is just like a fraction of the work. You implemented a far more accessible and scaffolded registration process. And I just want to sort of quickly go through this. There's a lot of information here, but you overhauled sort of the induction manual for newcomers. And so if we go to the next slide, we can see some of the things you wanted to make sure were in there. There's a lot on here, right? A welcome statement, a statement about your a commitment to not asking about immigration status, which is would of course vary by state and in terms of what you can or cannot say around that, and if you can make that promise, but numbers to call to register, lists of required documents and registration, and numbers to call for assistance. Is there anything in here that you want to like really call out and give a little bit more context for in terms of why you chose to make sure it was included? And there's a couple more pages as well that we'll dive into.
Yes. Well, for me, one of the most important thing was welcoming families, right? Just a short statement goes a long way, right? If you say so and so school district welcomes you to our community, and we will be happy to have your child in our school, I think that says a lot to the family that you are happy to actually have the child in your school. And many families are, especially when they're younger, sometimes they don't know where they're gonna drop their child. So saying that, it goes a long way.
There was some other information you put in specifically to help families navigate what may be a new structure for school based on what they would have experienced in their home country. So talk a little bit about these charts that you added to the to the sort of induction manual.
Yes, so I didn't mention before, but the idea of an induction manual is that it's not the student manual, right? This is a piece of this is a document that is specifically for families who are newcomers, because it specifies things that you might not need to share with families who have been here and know the system, right? Like the grading and how it goes along with the age. And I think this is very important because I have seen that many times there's this expectation on the of the family that their child was in second grade in their country, and that they assume that because the child was in second grade, they're going to be here in second grade. But then the age doesn't match the grade here, so it's a little bit disappointing for them to know, because they think that their child is going to go backwards or it's going to lose a year. And I think that's important for them. That's an expect okay the That's a clear expectation for parents, right? Your child's this age, this is the grade that they are going to be enrolled in. And that gives the family an idea that yes, this is going to happen. And the way I presented it to families was, don't think it as your child losing a year of school. Think it as another year of your child learning English. And what's a better way to learn English than your child in school with other children who speak English too? And yes, just things like that maybe so that you don't think that are so important, just looking from another perspective, from a newcomer perspective, all of these things are so new, and the student manuals are so huge. They have so much information, and that I don't think that I don't know who reads the student manual, but I hope some families do. But that's not necessarily the case many times, and especially when families come here and their priority is not to read out like 30-page document.
Yeah. And if we go to the next slide, you can see some of the other topics that America really made sure to hone in on. Are there any that you just really want to call out in terms of why you put it on there and why it's so critical to orient specifically newcomer families around some of these ideas and
So, yes. So for me, one of the most important is that family know the legal implications of not attending school for the children in the United States, because there might be legal consequences for the family. And we don't want families to get in trouble for something that they may not know. We want to inform them about those policies so they know what is the expectation. Also be clear on how they are going to report absences to school, right? That will help them to prevent these legal implications. Also, the grading system is very important. And conferences, school conferences, they have an opportunity to ask questions. And also, for me, again, it would be the translation and interpretation services. Right? Because families need to know that if they want to do any of the other things that are in the manual, or that are in the school website, or that is information that they need to do something and they want to do it, they know that they have the language support to start with.
when parents support learning and development at home, everyone thrives. Kids, educators, schools. But parents and school staff have so much on their plate, which can make it challenging to partner up. That's why Parent Powered is so effective. It reaches parents wherever they are and fits right into their busy lives, giving students more learning support without asking more from your busy team. Parent Powered is an evidence-based family engagement solution designed to reach all families, and we do it in the most accessible way possible: text messages. When you partner with Parent Powered, your parents receive a carefully crafted, standards-aligned curriculum that matches their students' age or grade. Through easy-to-act-upon insights, activities, and strategies, we help parents connect with their kids and turn everyday moments into learning moments. We even link families to critical local resources and supports and survey them about their needs. And access for everyone is built into our approach. Messages are culturally adapted and come to families in their home language. Emails often remain unopened, but text messages have a 98% open rate. And parent-powered messages work. Our approach has been shown to increase families' engagement at home and with school, leading to 2 to 3 months of learning gains. Parents, teachers, and administrators all see the results. With Parent Powered, parents become partners. Kids come to school even more supported and ready to thrive, and administrators have the easy tools they need to drive powerful family engagement.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.